Chilean Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the Friday episode of the Calcio Land podcast. We have a fantastic show for you today. We have two guests. We have the Derby della Madonnina, the Derby of Milano coming up this weekend. So we're going to look at it a little bit from both sides. But because our fantastic guest for Inter, Giulio Di Cienzo, is such an expert on the mid-table, I figured we'd take our monthly journey towards the lower parts of the table in Serie A. So you'll hear a little bit of that as well. We have a superb guest from Milan. I'm actually heading to New York Sunday. Great event at Jay-Z's Club 40 for 40 in New York. So we have Franco from the Milan New York Club who are organizing the event. It's an official Milan watch party. It should be fantastic. So you hear from Franco a little bit on Milan, but a lot on the history of his club and this awesome event on Sunday. Any of you, especially if you're a Milan fan on the East Coast, I definitely encourage you to consider coming on Sunday. Since there are games this weekend in Serie A, we have Thousand Name on deck with his game picks. I've watched some excellent movies recently, so we'll talk a little bit movies at the end. But, you know, this week we also had our dear friend Antonio Conte get back in the game. You know, he looked linked to Man United for a little while, but ends up going to Spurs. So I'm joined, of course, by our great friend, producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg. So in the past, we had talked a little bit because Conte had been linked to Spurs. So I don't want to beat that horse again. I want to look at it from a different perspective, Alex. Let's kind of go back a little bit to around this time last year. Maybe Christmas, year end of 2020. What would have surprised you more? Because now we have three of the biggest stars from Serie A all in the Premier League. So around this time last year, what have surprised you more? Lukaku at your club, Chelsea? Ronaldo heading back to Man United? Or Antonio Conte at Spurs? Which one of these would have surprised you more?
Oh, that's a really good question. So I'll do this by process of elimination, which I always feel like is a good way to find your answer. So this time last season, yeah, we still had Frank Lampard in charge. Then again, we were kind of already feeling like we needed a striker. That's no disrespect to Tammy Abraham or Olivier Giroud, but once Kai Havertz had come in and Timo Werner had come in by November, I think we were thinking that, all right, these players are good for sure, and especially with Kai, like, this is a diamond, hopefully, for a long, long time, and Timo's an attacker, he's a forward, but I think we had decided, all right, these are not pure strikers, and hey, we might actually still need a striker after that crazy summer where we acquired six senior players. I think even by November last season, we were saying, all right, we might need a striker. So the Lukaku one? Not that surprising. And also, David, I say that because of the sentimental attachment. If it was another striker of that caliber, they might be my answer for this that I'd be most surprised by, but not Lukaku specifically. So, nah. And then with Ronaldo, I mean, he felt stale at Juve. Not that he was no longer a good player or anything like that, but this time last year, I think it already kind of felt like, all right, where's Ronaldo going next? You know, is he going to the MLS? Is he going to PSG? Is he going back to Real Madrid? Is he going to Manchester United? Is he going to the Premier League? I really think that that would not have surprised me, especially if you had said Manchester United, for the same reason that I said, all right, well, Lukaku specifically to Chelsea wouldn't surprise me all that much. So yeah, I mean, I think that lands me on Conte to Spurs, and yeah, I just would not have been able to see that at the time. David, I think the only thing that would have made me be like, okay, I can see that, is just that it's Conte and that there's no stability with him or anything like that. So perhaps things can be looking great at one club, but then a minute later he can be somewhere else. Like, that part I wouldn't be too surprised by. But Spurs? Spurs? Yeah, that would have surprised me. And in fact, I think Mourinho is in charge at this point last season. So, on one hand, I mean, I can still see it because Mourinho doesn't keep jobs very long either. So I guess I would have been able to be like, well, Mourinho could get sacked any day now. And who knows, Conte, even if they're leading the league, they being Inter, could get sacked tomorrow because he just gets tired of it. So I could see kind of like the quickly moving on of Jose Mourinho. But still, Conte and Spurs, I mean, David, what happened this past summer where he was like, well, the ambition's not there from Spurs, and he kind of pulled out and everything. I just kind of felt like that was his impression of Spurs all along. So if you had asked me this question last November, I would have felt like, no, Conte's surging with Inter right now. He's trying to end what he started, like he so eloquently put earlier this week about starting Juve's Scudetto reign and then ending it. Like, why would he be managing Spurs? No. So, yeah, I think I have to go to that one. Like, now, David, obviously, as we get to see the timeline and everything, and we get to see how things unfold, now maybe it's a little less surprising because we know what has happened in the last year. But, yeah, last November, saying Conte's going to be managing Spurs, I would have been like, why? I don't feel like they meet his standard. I don't feel like they meet his ambition. I don't feel like they're a club properly run enough to at all work with him to not have fireworks every week. So, yeah, I think the big decider here was how I chose to do it, the process of elimination, but also just because of the emotional and sentimental attachments that Lukaku and Ronaldo have to their respective now current clubs. So I would say Conte to Spurs, David. Now, with Spurs in the mix here, we know Conte likes to change his teams to fit the tailor, right? He has said that before. And hey, a lot of managers should want to do that, and I imagine do want to do that. But do you expect Spurs to sign players specifically from Inter or Serie A in general, David?
Yeah, and by the way, I liked your answer. You know, one of the reasons that I was asking you is it really goes to show the power of the Premier League right now, because those were three as big of figures as we had in Serie A this time last year. They're all in the Premier League at different clubs, and no disrespect to Spurs, Chelsea, and Man United obviously are huge, huge clubs that have spent a ton. And to see the manager of the team that you just mentioned started the Juve Scudetto streak and ended it there just really tells you of the power of the Premier League over Serie A and pretty much almost all other leagues except for a few clubs there. So very interesting. And look, this time last year, we saw a little bit the Inter financial problems. We were starting to say, huh, this might be a huge factor. Things at Juve weren't going particularly well. And the Ronaldo thing, people were already saying, oh, you know, maybe if Juve didn't have Ronaldo's salary, they could be better. I think we know what the answer is now. To be fair to Juve, Ronaldo left so late that they really weren't able to spend the time, but I don't think they would have been able to. So I think it's an interesting exercise also to show how much things have changed. But back to the question. First off, I've been very critical of Paratici on this podcast, but when Spurs hired him to be their sporting director, be in charge of their technical area, I think him being able to deliver on Conte is probably as good an outcome as you could have expected or wanted from, sure, you know, big name players, of course, but to get a coach of that caliber, and I think Conte, you know, is in the conversation as one of the best coaches in the world there. Good for him. And we know Conte, I always say it, he is the Floyd Mayweather of picking his jobs. Floyd always knew when to pick his spots. You know, Conte's there on a short contract. The manager they finally hired failed. He's coming in with kind of low expectations, but a lot of upside. I don't see a lot of downside for Conte. I don't see a ton of opportunities to win titles. Like, even say everything goes best case scenario across the board, there's still your Chelsea, there's still Man City, there's still Liverpool in the Premier League. So, yeah, but I think it's an interesting fit. But let's get to the potential. Let's start with the Inter thing. So a couple of thoughts here. Keep in mind, Inter paid a lot of money to Conte as a severance when he wanted to leave, which, you know, was a nice thing to do. Conte wanted to leave. He was under contract, wasn't happy with the direction at Inter. They even gave him a golden parachute. The other aspect is the guy that runs Inter, Marotta, who we've talked a lot about on here. He used to work with Paratic, and there is some bad blood. There was an interview, and I think it was in May of last year, right around the time Inter had clinched the Scudetto, and, you know, Marotta was asked about his time at Juve, and he said, look, it was a bittersweet departure. I stayed in good in contact, have good terms with everyone, and he said, except for Paratic, and he said it's more of a personal thing than others. So between the severance and between the relationship and Marotta and Paratic, is Spurs at the top of the list of the teams Inter would want to sell one of their stars to? Probably not. But look, at the end of the day, money talks. We've seen it, especially now in the transfer market. But I have a hard time seeing that. If, say, Inter's financial situation gets worse, and I don't know if it will or not, but as it stands now, they keep saying they're not going to sell a lot of players. Say they were at the point where they have to sell someone between Barella, Skriniar, and Lautaro, which are probably their three most valuable players. I would imagine there would be a lot of market for any one of those players. It wouldn't just be Spurs. So at that point, Inter can say, you know what? We're in no rush to help out Conte and Marotta. We say, you know what? I'm in no rush to help Paratic either. So there's that aspect. Now, there is one player on Inter, and a key one, who is available on a Bosman, and that's Brozovic, a player which, by the way, we've talked up on this podcast for years. I've been saying it. I think it was 2-3 years ago I started saying, as Brozovic goes, so does Inter. If Brozovic's having a good game, odds are Inter is going to win. Very, very important player. I personally think for Inter, it's more important to resign Brozovic than it is for Milan with Kessié, Juve with Dybala. And I know that's a little bit, you know, that's a debatable, but I see Brozovic as Dybala is very injury prone. And there's some questions on how he fits tactically. Brozovic, you know exactly what he's going to do, how he fits. Yeah, is he going to get exposed against the high-end teams? Yeah. But in 80% of the games, you're going to be in a great shape with Brozovic. So he's available on a Bosman. And if he wants to join Conte at Spurs next season, there's really not much Inter can do about it. But what I would point out is I distinguish between the Conte guys and the Inter guys. To me, the Conte guys were more like Lukaku, Hakimi, Barella, these players that came in with Conte, and I would say Bastoni too is a player that Conte developed. So I kind of see those guys as Conte players. Brozovic I see more as an Inter player. He was there for a long time. He seems to really fit in the Pazza culture at Inter. So I don't know. I'm, you know, maybe I'm naive. I would say feel pretty good about Brozovic resigning with Inter because it's a great fit. And for Inter, it would be really bad to lose him because I think Brozovic is a pretty unique player in that regista role. Him and Barella work so well together that if Inter were to lose Brozovic, they probably have to change a little bit their system. I don't think you can say the same for Juve with Dybala because I think at that point you just play Chiesa as a second striker. So to me, it would be really traumatic for Inter to lose Brozovic, also because they don't have, you know, the huge financial ability to replace him and change system as needed. Juve still has Exor, and God forbid, I feel like it's inevitable that Dybala will resign, but I think Brozovic is so key to Inter. So that's maybe a player that we can see Spurs being able to get from Inter. I'd be pretty surprised if there was any of the stars. Now we're talking backup player with high salary, someone like Vidal, who actually is playing well right now. Would Inter be okay with letting him go and saving some money and go to Conte? Sure. But I don't think it would be the top players, but I'm sure Conte is very interested in the Italian market now. I think you're going to hear a lot on Vlahovic, Kessié, players like that, that Conte is familiar with. And look, you know, this has been in the past. I'm sure Conte, who works with Pastorello on these things, we're going to see some Pastorello players linked to Spurs. That wouldn't surprise me at all. So that's my prediction. I don't think huge stars at from Inter to Spurs, except for maybe Brozovic on a Bosman. But I do think we'll see Spurs linked to a lot of players in Serie A. Now, if that's conjecture or actually true, that remains to be seen. But I'm going to say it now. I don't expect Barella, Lautaro, or Skriniar on Spurs anytime soon.
Hmm. Okay. Well, it will be very interesting to follow what Spurs turn into. And let me just say it right now, Antonio Conte's short tenure with the club. All right, David, let's move on to a very long-standing segment, the opposite of what Conte's tenure will be. And that, of course, is the wonderful segment with Thousand Names, Game Picks. So who are you guys picking for the weekend?
Yeah, Thousand's been with us for 3 years, so yes.
Way right. Longer than Conte's going to last. Conte will be on two clubs in the span of that 3 years.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, let's see. Let's see if Mourinho even makes it to the game at San Siro against Inter in April or May. If it's late in the season, I predicted at the start of the season that it wasn't a lock he was going to make it there. So let's see what happens. But let's go back to the task at hand and the picks with Thousand Names. By now, you guys know the drill. He picks three games. I'll read them in English and Italian, and I'll make my pick as well. First match, a really good one. Fiorentina traveling to Turin to face Juve. Thousands prediction, 1-1 goes by McKinney and Castrovilla. I'm already laughing. Cuadrado misses penalty. He says Italiano is going to give a funeral to Allegri. He says Chiesa isn't going to touch a ball during the match and that Comiso is going to celebrate Andrea Agnelli's face. In Italian, Juve Fiorentina 1-1, McKinney Castrovilli, Cuadrado sbaglia rigore, Italiano fa il funerale ad Allegri, Chiesa non tocca palla, Comiso esulta in faccia ad Agnelli. So I'll tell you this, I have to say the games where I feel really not good about Juve's chances is when they play against a very defensive team, because then Allegri can't really do what he wants. And Fiorentina ain't one of them. They like the palleggio. They like to play the ball more. So this might actually be not that bad a fit for Juve. So I'm going to be bold. I'm going to give Juve a win. Man, Morata's in an awful slump, but I'll give him a goal and I'll give Juve a clean sheet. So we'll go Juve 1-0. Let me read that prediction in Italian. McKinney Castrovilli, Cuadrado sbaglia rigore, Italiano fa il funerale ad Allegri, Chiesa non tocca palla, Comiso esulta in faccia ad Andrea Agnelli. Okay, so Thousand has a draw. I have Juve winning. Big game on Sunday. And if you're a Milan fan on the East Coast or a Calcio fan, please consider coming to the event in New York City. It's going to be a blast. The derby, Milan's hosting. Thousand has Milan winning 2-1. Leao, Tonali, Skriniar. Handanovic is going to save a penalty. And he says between two teams that have no European mentality, Limone is going to lose once again. That's his nickname for Simone Inzaghi. And he says Father Pioli is going to hit on all his decisions. He says Perisic and Brozovic are going to leave the pitch with broken bones and that Lautaro Martinez is ridiculous. In Italian, Milan-Inter 2-1, Leao, Tonali, Skriniar, Handanovic para rigore, fra due squadre senza mentalità europea, perde ancora Limone, Padre Pioli indovina tutte le mosse, Perisic, Brozovic ne escono con le ossa rotte, Lautaro Martinez, ridicolo. I could go the easy route and just say a draw. I could, you know, play the home crowd since I'll be at a Milan event. But you know what? I picked Inter to win the Scudetto. Gun to the head, they are still my pick. So I'm going to be consistent. I'm going to have Inter winning 1-0 goal by Zeko. And if you're a Milan fan, seeing my ability to jinx teams, this is probably what you want me to say anyway. So don't hold it against me if you see me on a Sunday. This might work out better for you. And then next, last game, Atalanta traveling to Sardinia to play a real Cagliari, who are dead last. Thousand has Atalanta winning 2-0. Zapakosta Ilicic. He says Zapata is going to miss a penalty. He says Mazzarri was a manager that was finished 10 years ago. He said Giulini, Cagliari's president, is incompetent. And thank God for giving us Gasperini. Well, I agree on that last part. By the way, I have to say I really enjoyed all the love Gasperini has been getting on Twitter after that great Atalanta game against Man United. And I'm seeing, like, even Real Madrid fans say, oh, you know, we'd love to have Gasperini. I would just, as much as I love Gasperini, the idea of Gasperini at a club like Man United or Real Madrid makes my head explode. I think his head would explode within a week. He's just not suited for a huge, huge club. We talked a little bit with Giulio Di Cienza, and he seems to think maybe things have changed, but I think Gasperini needs to be kind of at a club at Atalanta, and that's perfect for him. But I do enjoy the fact that he's getting so much love. I'm going to attempt it. Let me read it in Italian. Cagliari Atalanta 0-2, Zappacosta Ilicic, Zapata sbaglia rigore, Mazzarri allenatore finito 10 anni fa, Giulini presidente incapace. Grazie Dio per averci dato Gasperini. I'm going to say this is exactly the type of game that we assume Atalanta is going to run up the score against a poor team, and then they end up with like a disappointing draw. So I'm going to predict 0-0 here, and it's going to be one of those games where we'll say, huh, this is where Atalanta just doesn't get over the hump. So those are our predictions. As always, thank you so much, Thousand Names, for your insight. We're lucky to have you as our oracle. Okay, so let's get to our first guest, Franco from the AC Milan New York City club. I'm just going to say this. I've known Franco for a while. I've seen the club. The hard work these people have put in to get to this event on Sunday is something I really respect. So I'm very happy that we had Franco on to talk. If you are someone who is thinking of starting a fan club for a team or have a fan club that's up and coming, I think you'll really enjoy this interview because he shared some awesome tips as well. Okay, guys, so not only do we have a very exciting Derby della Madonnina coming on Sunday with both Inter and Milan off to great starts to the season, but for those of us that are Calcio fans based in the U.S., there is also an awesome event taking place in New York City this weekend on Sunday. There is going to be an official Milan watch party organized from the club. This is going to be in New York City. So what I wanted to do was bring on a good friend of mine, someone that I've known for a few years. We've crossed paths a few times in the Calcio journey in North America, my friend Franco Zagari from the New York City Milan fan club, who are hosting this event. So we'll talk a little bit about Milan, but we're going to focus more on the history of the club and talk a little bit about this event. And we'll try to inspire. I know there's a lot of you that are out there that are either part of a fan club or thinking of starting one. And what Franco has done is beyond impressive with his. So after that long intro, my friend, always a real pleasure to chat Calcio with you. Benvenuto to Calcio Land.
Oh, thanks. Grazie for having me. It's definitely good to speak to you on your show for once. And, you know, like you said, we go way back in the cultural realm. We've been through the evolution of the culture world, especially on this side of the ocean. So
yeah, for sure. And I want to stress all the work that Franco and his crew has put in to get to this point. But before we get to your club, let's get in the derby mood. We're recording this after the Champions League game, but Milan has been doing great in Serie A, so I want to focus a little bit more on this. So before we get to your club, I just have a couple questions on Milan. I have to say, I feel that a lot of the reason Milan's doing so well is the improvements of younger players on the team. So let me ask you this. Who has surprised you more this season, Franco? Has it been Tonali, Leao, or Brahim Diaz?
So my answer is going to be Leao. For me, Brahim Diaz, you know, had phenomenal skill. He just needed to find a team with room for him to showcase it. I think, you know, it's hard for a player like that to showcase himself properly at a team like Real Madrid. And then I think the departure of Calhanoglu just kind of just solidified that for him. You know, he was very instrumental down the stretch last season. And then at the beginning of this season before being out for this short period, he has been nothing short of phenomenal. So can't really say I was too surprised with him. So, you know, leaving the other two, you know, it really was like a toss up between Leao and Tonali. For me personally, you know, I'm just talking about my own personal opinions here and nothing, you know, that reflects my club or anything. But for me, the talent for Tonali was always there. I did not kill him the way other people did, like last season. You know, he certainly wasn't great, but I knew he needed time. You know, they went out and invested on him for a reason. You know, Milan, especially with the current ownership and the current climate, you know, don't go out and frivolously spend on people who, are subpar. So obviously they saw something in him. He's been so good for Milan this year, but I really can't say I'm surprised. I am quite surprised with Leao. If I was on your show a year ago on this calendar date, I would have torn this guy apart. I would have completely torn this guy apart. I felt that he was a very limited player. He was very good with the ball at his feet, but lacked in most other areas, I would say, less than a year ago. So, you know, at that point, not great in the air, not strong, poor off the ball. I feel like he really worked hard in the offseason. You know, something really galvanized him. I don't know if it was Milan making the Champions League and he knew to keep up with this roster that he needed to do some work. And, you know, he works so much harder this year. He's a great partner for Zlatan. You know, he's not afraid to take on defenders. He tracks back well. All the little things have improved greatly. I think it also helps that he stays on the outside. He's not asked to play in a role that he's not used to playing and is not really suited for him. He's not a pure striker, and I think he's proved that. And even in the past few games, he's really called upon to do a lot of work with Rebic out, and I think it showed in this game versus Porto in the Champions League where he looked tired. So, but kudos to him. He definitely is the one who surprised me the most this season.
I love this answer because, like you, I tore him apart a lot. I thought he was a very frustrating player because you saw the talent was there, and a lot of times you question if the effort was there. So I love this answer. And, yeah, I would have to say I agree because the turnaround in him was really quite dramatic. So let me ask you this. One thing that really stands out to me about this Milan team and probably my favorite thing about it is how resilient they are and how – every time something happens that you're like, wow, this is finally going to end, the fairy tale, they'll come back down to earth. They respond. You know, we've had multiple key players out with COVID, probably at the worst possible time. We've had, you know, Maignan's injury felt like losing Donnarumma all over again for a second time in the span of a few months. And Milan keeps bouncing back. So I have to say that's one thing that I think is awesome about this team. But what do you like about – is there something about this specific squad that you like in particular?
Yeah, I mean, the resiliency is definitely something to comment on. You know, people filling roles with other people going down. You know, COVID is still an issue where you end up losing a player for 10 days. You know, Theo Hernandez went down, and you have guys like Kalulu and Baloture who have been able to fill in, you know, temporarily nicely. Obviously, you still miss a guy like Theo Hernandez when he goes out and stuff, but, you know, and we'll find that out on Sunday as well. For me, it's a dynamic team. When they are on the field, they play with an incredible amount of confidence, and they're not very cookie cutter. Just to draw an example, I feel as though a team like Atalanta is very, as dynamic as they used to be, have now become predictable in the sense that when they line up with a certain formation, you know what that formation is going to do. And conversely, I feel as though, you know, for Milan, a formation is a formality, because when that game starts, you know, 4-2-3-1 or whatever the heck you're playing kind of disappears, you know, and the team just adapts to what's around them. And for me, that's, you know, remarkable and something that Pioli truly deserves credit for. And in my opinion, you know, players join the attack, others cover behind, players pinch in, dragging defenders with them, you know, so it's a very entertaining team that is not very predictable. And I think that's something that Pioli has figured out in his career that perhaps he had never figured out before. And I think it helped them also down the stretch last year when people were just expecting that Pioli decline in the spring, you know, that very, you know, almost predictable decline that people expect from Pioli teams, and he was able to avoid that, and perhaps he figured something out about his own coaching skill in that. Depth has increased, you know, we talked about that. you know, I still think they're lacking in certain areas, but I really feel like this is, like you said, a resilient team, but also a dynamic team when they're on the field and they don't marry themselves. The coach and the players don't marry themselves to just one mentality, one formation. Like, this is my role as an individual. I think there's a real sense of team there that that deserves to be applauded.
For sure. Very well said. So speaking of resilience, hard work, you know, I've been in the Calcio North American community for quite some time. I think we're coming up on 8-9 years. And you guys, the AC Milan Club New York City was already a huge institution when I started dabbling into this world. You know, I've met you at a few events. You know, when Milan comes here in the summer before COVID, you guys are always present. You guys do great stuff at Football Factory in New York. So tell us a little bit how the club started and a little bit the evolution of the club over the years.
Yeah, so we're talking about a history that's almost 13 years old at this point, and it's pretty long-winded, so I'll do my best to keep it short. This club actually starts in 2008 as a part of the Milan Club of New Jersey, which was a club that had just began getting started, and they were based in Totowa, New Jersey. So for those who don't know the geography, it's about a half hour car ride from Midtown Manhattan. For those non-New Yorkers, we measure things in time here because miles are nothing when it comes to traffic. So a couple of guys ended up meeting each other through that. Alessandro Rimaldi was the first member of Milan Club New Jersey. And then after a while, met up with Giancarlo Roselli and Francesco Campari. I consider those three guys the founders of this club. And I joined them shortly after, you know, maybe in like late 2010. And one of the things that we had the foresight to do was to jump on emerging trends in social media. So in 2010 was, you know, the advent of Twitter and you know, Facebook began expanding beyond, you know, personal posts. And, you know, they started with interests and groups and kind of took over where MySpace had left off. So, you know, we kind of, you know, we had that foresight, but, you know, we were also, we benefited from the growth of that too. So social media was a very big thing. And one of the things that we realized through social media was that Totowa, New Jersey was not the place that we wanted to be. So,
yeah,
you know, we maintained a very good relationship with the club in New Jersey, but we kind of always considered ourselves like an outside faction, even of that club. So we were almost like our own chapter. You know, we considered, yeah, our, you know, we were a younger group too. You know, the gentlemen, the majority of the New Jersey club was more like a social club, you know, more, you know, retirees and guys who were, you know, middle-aged, and they, you know, weren't interested in going into the city. They weren't interested in having like a stadium atmosphere. So after a while, we actually started to expand into Manhattan. We said, we need to be more centralized. We need to be a place where more people are willing to come to from all over the area. And so we started exploring bars. We started exploring bars and restaurants in the city that would cater to us. And it took us a while. It really took us a while to find a home. Euro 2012 helped us find the Football Factory. So the Football Factory,
yeah,
is right in Midtown Manhattan. It's across the street from the Empire State Building. And it's owned by one of the kings of supporter culture in New York City. His name is Jack Keane. And we owe him so much of our success, because nice, he built this institution that is the Football Factory and allowed us to achieve the vision that we had for the club. And it's simply watching games, being rowdy, and making it as much fun as and like a stadium atmosphere as possible that you yourself have experienced, and hopefully some of your listeners have experienced too, and hopefully one day, you know, ones who haven't get to experience. So, you know, after 2012, that became our home. And, you know, unfortunately for us, that was the beginning of the decline for Milan. So we endured quite an amount of time.
You did.
And fortunately, we have come out the other end, I would say, a better club for it. You know, we learned a lot about ourselves. We learned a lot about who we wanted to be as a club and who we should be as a group to represent Milan on this side of the ocean. And it's simply trying to be as inclusive as possible, you know, bridging the gap between Milano and New York, bridging the gap between Italian immigrants in New York, you know, people who come here for work, younger Italians who come here for work and school, people like me who are son of Italian immigrants from an older generation who grew up in New York, and then the people who aren't Italian at all that just became Milanisti for one reason or another. You know, there's so many groups in our club that personify what it means to be a Milan fan, what it means to be a New Yorker. And so, you know, we give people exactly what I personally wanted to grow up with, was just somebody to watch Milan with and somebody to fraternize with and somebody to go crazy with. And that's why we love our home football factory. That's why I believe that this club, especially I would say in the last 5-6 years, has become much, much more successful.
Well said. I love the story. So let's talk a little bit about this awesome event that's coming up on Sunday. So Milan started this initiative from Milan to many watch parties. This is kind of a way for them to reach out for fans outside of Italy, outside of Europe. Actually, the first one today was in Dubai. We're recording this right after the Milan Porto match. And on Sunday, you guys are hosting in New York. So, you know, if you're a North American culture supporter, you know, obviously Milan, you have a huge incentive, but I would say anyone who feels, you know, linked to the culture family in North America, definitely consider coming. So tell us a little bit about this event and what people can expect on Sunday.
Sure. And I definitely recommend that too. Like I said, this is certainly a Milan event. And so for those who are not Milan fans, if you want to attend, you know, just, you know, be cautious that you're walking into, you know, a room full of about 250 to 300 Milan fans. We woke up one morning with an email from a very important person at Milan by the name of James Murray, who is Ivan Gudzi. This is chief of staff, and yeah. Peter Morgan, who is Milan's lead marketing CRM director. And they came to us with this idea and they said, hey, listen, Roc Nation is looking to do this event in Manhattan. You know, they were very cordial, and they were very understanding that the fact that the football factory is our home. But they said, listen, this is a Roc Nation event and they want to do it in their bar. So the 4040 Club is a bar in Manhattan that is owned by Jay-Z. And so obviously the link with Roc Nation is there. You know, we just couldn't say no. And fortunately for us, we have a relationship with the football factory and Mr. Jack Yean, that he was extremely, extremely understanding. He understood the opportunity being given to us. And so for that, you know, we owe him a debt of gratitude, too. So the event will be held during the Derby. They wanted to send us like a Milan legend or perhaps like even a trophy to display or some memorabilia with the travel bans still in place. Unfortunately, on Sunday, they get lifted on Monday, the 8th. They couldn't do that. And because of some time constraints, too, they couldn't do that. So instead, they decided to send 250 free gifts. So whoever the 250 lucky people are to walk through that door first are going to get a free gift sent directly from Milan. Those doors will open at 1 p.m. And, you know, just while we wait around for those people who get there that early, you know, from 1 o'clock to 2:45 is a long time. So we're going to have old clips from past derbies in the pregame with music playing. We're going to have a little bit of a pre-match ceremony where we present something special to the manager of the 4040 Club. There's going to be definitely, you know, like a lot of photo and video crews talking to people. They're going to go around and getting people's individual stories. You know, so far we've heard from so many people traveling, you know, yourself and other people from Boston, the Milan Club of Boston, Milan Club of Philly. We've heard from people in Florida and D.C. and stuff, all confirmed to travel for this match. So it's been very well received. And Milan wants to hear their story. They want to hear why people are willing to drive 6 hours to come to the city to watch a game in a bar with a bunch of people. So, you know, obviously it helps that the team is doing well.
It does.
For people who are considering coming, there's a couple of things that I just wanted to highlight as well.
Yeah.
So New York City has a vaccine mandate for entering bars and restaurants. So that's important for people to know before they consider traveling. Kids are allowed, which is not very typical of our events, just because we usually watch a game in a bar. Even though this is a bar, it's a private event. So they've allowed minors to enter with an adult. Like I said, the doors open at 1 p.m. Sunday is also the New York Marathon. So if people are coming from far, just, you know, plan ahead, because you're gonna hit an enormous amount of traffic. So that's that. Milan Rock Nation, Milan Club, New York City. It's the 4040 Club, 6 West 25th Street. It's right near the Flatiron Building. If anybody knows anything about New York City, it's right in the heart of Manhattan.
Awesome. Really, really great stuff. I really can't wait. The more details makes me even more excited to be there. So if you're a Milan fan around the area, please brave the marathon. It would be great if there was a great showing for this. I think it would be really great for the movement here. So Franco, before I let you go, you mentioned, you know, you have people from different clubs coming, which is great. You guys have an incredibly well-established club with a huge following. You know, you're at the point where Milan is contacting you to host these events. And, you know, I've known you and I've seen the hard work that it takes to get to this point. So you've talked about inclusivity before and, you know, making people feel at home. Is there, and using social media, obviously really important. Is there anything else, any advice you would give to people that have started a club and are looking to grow, or someone who's thinking of starting their own?
Yeah, I mean, this is a conversation that I feel like I've had quite a number of times over the last, you know, 8-10 years with various people who now run very successful clubs. And for me, the classic line when people come to me and say, hey, where do I start, is, you know, I use that old movie line, if you build it, they will come, the Field of Dreams line. Because if you show people that this exists somewhere, somebody out there in your city, in your geographic area is going to be like, oh my God, I've been waiting for this. I've been looking for this. And if you're that one person to start it and you find that second person, they're going to join you. And then you can start a partnership together to build something. Don't be afraid to move around and try different bars. That's obviously something that I highlighted before in the history of our own club. One thing that I have figured out and that I think works extremely well for our club, and I always tell people, is don't go at it alone. So if you are looking to start a Milan club and you find that second person, make them your partner. Make them somebody who, you know, you can rely on. And then this way you can kind of share the responsibilities. We have a club now of about 70 members, and 12 of which belong to the executive committee that each play an integral role. I know a lot of people end up hearing my voice on podcasts like these and hear from me like through social media. That's just my role. But we have people who fly back and forth to Milano and play that kind of role. We have people who are at Football Factory much more than I am, because, you know, I'm tied up with family things, and other people may have the extra time that I do not, and they play that role. There's people who have connections that I don't, or have, you know, a business sense that I don't have. So it's important to have a team of people with various skill sets that help a club grow. If you try to go at it alone, you're going to have a hard time. If you go at it alone, you know, your social media is going to become synonymous with you as a person, where, you know, it's always good to show a personal side, but, you know, don't make an account that has like a geographic area on it, but it's only one person, you know, uh-huh. Just, you know, speaking for an entire, you know, quote unquote club. You know, it shouldn't be a personal soapbox, but, you know, people should be able to see your personal side as well.
Great stuff. Well, Franco, I can't thank you enough. Congratulations again for this huge achievement. Again, I really appreciate hard work, and I love that if you build it, they will come. I think that's a great attitude. So I know there's a lot more work for you before Sunday. So all the best with that. And thanks for coming on the pod to talk about it, and I look forward to seeing you on Sunday. So all Milan fans on the East Coast, if you're on the fence, please come. I think it'll be awesome. We're all going to brave through the marathon. So please come. I think it'll be a great time. So Franco, thank you so much for doing this, my friend, and look forward to seeing you Sunday and chatting with you again soon.
Yeah, I truly appreciate your kind words, just, you know, about myself and about our club, you know, on this recording, but all the time, every time I speak to you, you've been very cordial and just very complimentary about the work that we have. So it's always good to be recognized for, you know, some of the time that we put into stuff like this. And like I said, you know, Milan fans especially, but Calcio fans, come out. Definitely come experience this. It's been very well received since we posted it on, you know, early last week when we announced this event. It's been very, very well received. So it seems as though we're going to have quite the crowd, and it's definitely not an event to miss. So thank you, David. And thanks for everybody who is listening right now. And we hope to see you. You know, if you show up and introduce yourself, don't be shy.
Okay, great to hear from Franco. Before we get to Inter in the mid-table with our friend Julia, we're going to do a quick part. Well, not a quick part. We're going to do a part of the podcast for our patrons. If you do enjoy this podcast, consider supporting us on Patreon. You'll get an episode on Tuesday just for patrons, a monthly special with Napoli Outsider, which we'll do during the international break. In some tiers, we have some awesome articles. This helps pay our contributors, not me, but all the people that help out with the articles, Alex, the production cost, and everything that's left we donate to an awesome charity called the Insuperabili in Italy, and you'll be joining an awesome community of like-minded Calcio fans. Okay, so we had a little Milan perspective with the derby coming up on Sunday. So I figured we'd also touch base on Inter. So I wanted to bring in my dear friend Giulio Di Cenzo. But since he is an expert also on the mid and lower table, I always try to do at least once a month kind of a recap there. So we'll talk a little bit about Inter at the top and then work our way down to the table. So Giulio, it's always a real pleasure to chat with you, my friend. Bentornato to Calcioland.
Grazie, David. It's a pleasure also for me. And I saw that you invited also Daniele Mazzanti, so I see what you're doing here.
for sure. Yeah, it was great to have Daniele on recently. It's always a pleasure to talk for you guys. For those of you not familiar with Giulio, he's one of the fantastic hosts of Box to Box, which is my favorite Calcio podcast. It's an Italian, really great stuff. So let's talk a little bit about your team first. Let's talk about Inter with the derby coming up. So I'm going to ask you this. Are there any Milan players you would want to have on Inter right now? And if you could pick, who would it be and why?
Mike Maignan. It's pretty simple because Inter needs a new goalkeeper, and Maignan is a modern goalkeeper that is not able to play as a classical goalkeeper, but is the first regista of the team and is able to play short and long. So it's a very important fit of a goalkeeper, and so I pick him also, but he's not playing on Sunday, so it's a little bit strange as an answer, but my pick is Maignan.
Awesome. Yeah, I definitely agree. He's been sensational. And anyone who's followed you on Twitter is well aware on how you feel on Handanovic. So I want to ask you this about Inter, because last season they had the best defense in Serie A. They brought back the whole unit back. But so far, they've given up 12 goals, which I would point out is the same amount as Roma, which you thought they had a shaky defense going into the season. And I think that's proved to be true. But on the flip side, Inter, who lost Lukaku and Eriksen's been out, of course, leads the league in goal scores with 28. So let me ask you this. What surprises you more? The fact that Inter has scored these many goals and that they've conceded more goals than I certainly would have expected this season?
Well, I'm more upset for the goal against. So I'm a little bit surprised of the goal scored because of the absence that you that you presented, also Hakimi, remember, and the fact that especially Dzeko provided a huge step in his goal scoring abilities respect to the last year in Rome. But the goals conceded are a problem for Inter because Inter demonstrated some problems in his defensive phase besides the defenders and as a general the general balance of the team. And something is changed, but Inter is not perfect, has some problem also on set pieces. And the next two games against Milan and Napoli will tell more about the defensive struggles of Inter.
Fair. So let's talk a little bit about the new additions. I think the last game especially, we had a Correa, who looked terrible for a while, solved the game. Dumfries with an assist. And Çalhanoğlu's been a little bit up or down, which I think anyone who's followed him kind of expected. So let me ask you, if you had to rank Correa, Dumfries, and Çalhanoğlu based on who has helped Inter the most so far, what would that ranking look like?
But rank, I could present a rank in the circles of Dante's Inferno, something like that right now. No, jokes apart, the most solid of the new additions of the roster between them is Çalhanoğlu. Also, if we're talking about a player with highs and lows, but Çalhanoğlu is a little bit more... inside the team, respect of Dumfries and Correa. He's growing. In the last games, I saw him a little bit better because in the first games, taking apart the first game against Genoa, he was not so involved. I'd like to see him more getting the ball from the defense, helping Brozovic in the first construction. And he hasn't done it so well in the central phase of the first months of the season. For Correa played two games in the first 4 months, and so it's difficult to say something about that. He has his physical problems, and he didn't play. So I expect a lot from him in the next month, but you know, especially against Milan and Napoli, because he needs to show something, and the time is running up. So Correa was the principal signing of this summer for Inter Calcio Mercato. Is a precise selection of Inzaghi that trained him at Lazio. So we need something more from Correa. Dumfries, as I was saying, in this summer, is something like a role player. He has some qualities, but he needs to refine that. And he showed precisely that in the first months. The real problem about Dumfries is the penalty against Juventus. Without that, that error, we were talking about with not so negative emphasis, but Dumfries need to understand how to play. And I mean, in the tactical movement, he seems to be late in every moment he made. So they need to grow in different ways, but they all need to grow.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting to me is, you know, Pazza enters a little bit back more with Conte gone. And all three of these players I would describe as feast or famine. Like, they can have amazing moments and then some other moments where you just left scratching your head. Okay, let's move to the lower part of the table. And if any of you are ever traveling on a train in Italy and there's a guy watching like Genoa, Salernitana, or Venezia, Empoli on demand, odds are it's Giulio. So that's like a dead giveaway. You live for this relegation zone. So let's start with Cagliari, who has been really bad.
And really, really bad.
And they have, you know, when I look at their squad, there's a lot of worse squads than Serie A, in my opinion. So do you think this, for sure. And so do you think this will continue? You think Mazzarri is going to turn it around? You think Mazzarri goes and maybe they bring back Semplici? What's going on there? And do you think they will avoid relegation?
But as you say, as a roster, Cagliari is way better than a lot of teams in Serie A, but they are the second worst defense and the third worst attack in Serie A. So it's something awful, really, really awful. And they are dead last in Serie A, and they made less points than Salernitana. That it's a shame. There's no other way to put that. The problem with Cagliari is that they came from a very difficult season the last year, and everyone think that they will get back with a vengeance. So the big names in the roster will perform better and avoid that kind of problems. Instead, they are full into the same problems. They start the season with Semplici in the exact right right way that they finished the last season, with defensive problems, struggles in defense spaces. They didn't find anything new in the game. They didn't have any aggressive new aggressivity and something like that. And everyone think that with Mazzarri, at least they could grow up as the intensity and the defensive side of the game. Instead, also Mazzarri showed the same problems. He bring to the team this 4-4-2 with a defensive mind, and he couldn't find anything new, essentially, apart for the tactical choices. The only thing that get that 6 point to Cagliari is the attacking couple formed by Keita Baldé and João Pedro, that are by far the best player on the roster, and they are their last hope to get something different in that situation. It's a really strange situation, and right now Mazzarri didn't bring anything. Also with the usual shock when you change your trainer, and so it's very difficult to tell what will happen there, because Semplici, it will be a return from a situation when he tried to change something last year and he didn't make really something, and he started this season working all the summer and didn't get nothing new in this team. So also, if you want to get rid of Mazzarri, why bring back Semplici? It's a really difficult situation. And a part of that, on the next calciomercato window in gennaio, there will be a problem, because some players like Nandez, Godin, but also João Pedro, in my opinion, will ask something to Giulini, the president of Cagliari, because they are not made for this kind of situation, and it will be a huge problem for them.
Yeah, you know, Cagliari in a little way reminds me of Torino, who ironically was Mazzarri's last team, and he's been out of the game for a while. I just feel like there's a malaise around the club, and we'll get to Juric later on in our chat, but I feel like they're kind of like Torino, just in a huge
funk. A sad team, especially they are a sad team. They need a sparkle in some way, and it's hard to tell how they get, especially because their last problems began when Dalbert got injured. So when you lose Dalbert and you crumble as a team, it's not a great sign.
It's probably not. Okay, so let's leave Sardinia. Let's go to Liguria. We're going to talk a little bit about the clubs there. So at the beginning of the season, Spezia looked like a team that really didn't have a lot of Serie A players. They had lost their great manager, Italiano. They took a gamble on Thiago Motta. And then we have Genoa, on the other hand, who changed the team basically every year. They have a new team, but they had kept Ballardini, who seemed to have a magic touch there. But both of them are a little bit up and down. I have to say Spezia has been better than I thought, and Genoa worse. So between these two, who do you think has a better chance of avoiding relegation?
Looking at the roster, always Genoa. I didn't think that Genoa will find all of these problems, but Ballardini had a lot of problems. Genoa is really a chaos as a team right now. Ballardini changed nearly everything, not only game by game, but half game to half game, and he constantly chases his defensive line, his offensive line, his midfielder, the tactical approach, everything. And it's really, really strange from a coach that was here the last year and that has his experience. There's something strange also in Genoa, and that chaos is getting the team in the relegation zone way beyond the expectations. Spezia, on the other way, doesn't, as you said, if you look at the roster, it doesn't seem a Serie A team, but in the first months of the season, it doesn't seem a team at all, because sometimes Thiago Motta had 14 players at all that he can choose for make the team. It's quite a miracle they get 8 points and they have, a tactical a so solid tactical approach. Thiago Motta made a great work. The problem is that they have some limits in the numbers and also in the quality of the players. They desperately need a center forward, because Nzola is not fit. And so for the names, I told you that for avoiding relegation, Genoa is in a better situation, but Spezia right now is a better team, despite the names. So it's a difficult situation.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the other team in Genoa, and that's Sampdoria. I want to talk about them compared to Venezia, which this really surprised me. So they have the same amount of points, but what surprised me is Sampdoria has Daversa, who in theory is a good defensive coach. They've given up 23 goals, which is a ton. Venezia don't score a lot, but they don't concede a ton either. I have to say I've enjoyed watching Venezia. I like what Zanetti is doing as manager. I would have never at the beginning of the season even thought that Venezia would be somewhat comparable to Sampdoria. Do you think Venezia can kind of be a surprise team that avoids relegation somewhat comfortably, and Sampdoria find themselves in a dogfight to stay in Serie A?
But the fact is that there are a lot of teams that are in the relegation battle. So someone will get saved for this kind of situation. So someone between Empoli, Venezia, or Spezia should stay in Serie A, and it will be a huge surprise, because they didn't have the names to the category, but they are a solid tactical approach. Also, Venezia is an entertaining team to watch. They try to play every game, besides the problems, the injuries, and so on. You can't tell the same for Sampdoria. The strange situation about Sampdoria is that they have a roster of mid-table in Serie A, and obviously superior respect to the relegation situation. The last year with the Ranieri, they were a team that has how can say that? They know how to do what they will do. So they were sure about their defense, but also the offensive side. And they suddenly lost nearly everything in the first games. They started well with Caputo, Quagliarella, also Gabbiadini, a great start from Candreva. But then they lose nearly everything. And also Daversa started with a 4-4-2 with solid ideas, simple but solid ideas, a classic in Serie A. And then he lost this kind of ideas. He started with three men in defense. And the last game, he played something strange, a hyper-defensive team that didn't get nothing good to him. So he Daversa lost something in the last month, and Sampdoria with him, they lost their set, their sureness, and the defensive line showed us much more problems that they expected. We all expected about that. So it's not so easy for Sampdoria, but Sampdoria has the experienced player to get rid of all these kind of problems. Let's see if Daversa get back to something more simple and effective.
Sure. Yeah, I have a feeling somebody will make a coaching change and they'll be okay, but it's a huge drop off to lose Ranieri. Like, you could make a case no team in the mid lower table had like a bigger drop. I would say Verona leaving with Juric gone, but yeah, it's a huge drop off there. Before we get to Juric, because I'm very curious to get your thoughts on this, let's talk about two other teams kind of in the middle. Bologna, with Mihailovic, who stayed on board. They had continuity. Sassuolo made a change, bringing in Dionisi. Who do you think is going to finish ahead between these two teams? I think they have pretty comparable squads. So I'm curious who you think will be on top at the end of the season.
But the bold prediction is Bologna, because Bologna is always in a golden mediocrity and seems like a team that never found the way to step up. But right now they are playing well, and the addiction of Arnautovic helped a lot the game of Mihajlovic, because Mihajlovic always tried too much with the offensive side, with a lot of players that keep moving and so on. And sometimes having a real nine with a definitive, a precise role helps you to build up the team around him. And Arnautovic is making precisely this. I told you Bologna because instead Sassuolo, after the departure of the Zerbi, is trying to find something new, and they need to change something with Dionisi to find a new style, and especially to make two players grow, that are Raspadori and Frattesi, that right now are two of the best players on the roster, but they struggle to find their ideal position. So Dionisi, I think that they will lose some other points in the making, and Sassuolo has a general problem on the defensive side because it's a little bit too easy to get in front of Consigli. So I told you, yeah. Bologna, but it's a bold prediction, I admit.
Yeah, it is, because I think Sassuolo slightly better squad, but yeah, sí, sí. I hear what you're saying, and you're right, Arnautovic has certainly had a big impact there. So I want to talk to you about Juric, who I think, other than Pioli, is, I think, the Serie A coach of the year so far. I think he's done an outstanding job. You know, we were talking about how Cagliari kind of has this dark cloud hanging over them, and I feel like Torino had it for like the past 2-3 seasons, and Juric has really turned it around. So do you think Juric could maybe coach Roma, Napoli, maybe even Inter someday, or do you think he needs to be like Gasperini, who is kind of like his mentor, like find a team like Atalanta, who's going to build the team in his image and maybe, you know, can get lucky? Do you think he could have a bigger team, or does he have to follow the Gasperini blueprint?
But I think that he could have a bigger team and he could learn something from Gasperini. First of all, the football is changed from the time Gasperini get to Inter, and maybe there is a little bit more, the ambient of a big team is a little bit more ready to get something like the ideas of a coach like Juric. And then it's all about finding a way to get the situation going. The Napoli of today, because it come from long years of construction and so on. For example, for Roma, Juric, it could be a great addiction, because you need to find a new way, and you don't have a solid system that rejects new ideas that are maybe so different from the others, like happened in Inter for Gasperini. Juric has great ideas. It could be a little bit strange to see from outside, but everything works, and he is able to valorize his players, and also with some strong choices. For example, he chose the Bremer, to put Bremer in the center of his defense. That wasn't that wasn't so obvious. He makes some selections about his players in this very sure about what he do. So Juric is a great manager, and it's interesting to see what was follow up for him, because as you said before, it wasn't so easy to reanimate the Torino ambient, and he in a little time he made that.
Yeah, you know, I really wouldn't mind seeing him at Roma, or maybe even down the line at Inter. I think he'd actually be good there. So let's close on this, Giulia. It's always really, really great job. I love talking culture with you. Looking at the teams we talked about, or anyone else in the relegation relegation zone. Give us a couple of players that maybe someone that follows Calcio more casually than you, which is pretty much everyone, needs to check out.
Beh, there's a youngster in Salernitana called Frank Ribery that I believe that he has the time to play in big teams and even fight for the golden ball maybe a day. Apart from that, I know that you want to hear Gianluca Busio, that in Venezia is playing well, is a regular starter, and is finding his dynamics in the midfield. And I prefer him as when he plays as on the center left of the midfield rather than in front of the defense. He's growing up and they are counting on him. Apart from him, similar, there is Samuele Ricci from Empoli that is a deep line playmaker born in the 2001, and it's really interesting. Also in Empoli there is Bairami is the regular starter trequartista, but Anderson that sometimes he play on the midfield, but also in the position of Bairami is another interesting player. Is a very mobile player. And then we talk about Spezia. In Spezia there is Migliore, the captain of the team, that is growing up. In my opinion, is already better than the last season. He learned to play in the two midfielders in the 4-2-3-1, and is growing up, and it could be an interesting player. And then, in the last of the Serie A, and I mean in Cagliari, there is a player named João Pedro is interesting. He doesn't. He could be a start, not a starter, but he could get in the roster, offensive rosters, also if he being in a big team. He has experience, his quality, and he demonstrated a lot in the last year. The last name in Venezia, I forgot. There is the right fullback, that is Mazzocchi. Search for his tattoo on the back that is particular, but is a very offensive player. It is interesting.
Great stuff, Giulio, as always. Love your energy. Those of you learning Italian, those of you that already are fluent in Italian, if you're not listening to Vox to Box, you're missing out. We love having the hosts on. So thank you so much for doing this, Giulio. Keep up the great work on your pod, and we look forward to chatting with you again soon as well here.
As you want, David. Thank you so much for your invitation.
Okay, guys. I wanted to end the podcast talking a little bit about movies. You guys know pop culture has been a big part of the pod in the past. We haven't done it in a little while. So I saw a couple of movies recently. Wes Anderson's new movie, The French Dispatch. And I saw Dune on IMAX earlier this week, which was an absolutely amazing experience. I cannot recommend it enough. I'm not a big science fiction guy anymore. I used to be. I've become more of a reality-based person. I had tried watching Dune at home on HBO Max. I didn't make it past the initial narration. It's just really hard for me to focus on a new movie at home. But took a couple of edibles, went to see it on IMAX, and it was really a great experience. I can't recommend it enough. But the one thing that I wanted to point out is the great performances by one of my favorite actors, Timothy Chalamet, who stars in both Dune, and he's the central character in an epic, which is probably going to be three movies long. And at the same time, he was also in the French Dispatch, Wes Anderson movie, very, very different than Dune. And what I love about the contrast between the two is he can be kind of like the superhero messiah figure in a blockbuster and then play a more subtle role. French Dispatch is basically three vignettes, if you will, three mini movies in one. And Timothée Chalamet stars opposite Frances McDormand, who has two Oscars under her belt, is probably the best actress alive right now. More than held his own in the scenes with her. You also see them in bed together. It's a really, really, I wouldn't say The French Dispatch is by any means one of my favorite Wes Anderson movies, but I just love Timothy Chalamet. Been a huge fan of his. Interestingly, I really got into him when he was in two movies that were released at the same time, kind of like now, Lady Bird, which he was great in, and especially Call Me By Your Name, which is probably one of the most romantic movies I've ever seen. And I've been a huge fan of Timothée Chalamet since then. He's been in a lot of good stuff. You know, we don't have that many huge major stars. Actors, I always say, an actor whose name you can put on top of the movie. We don't have too many of them, but I do think Timothée Chalamet is going to be that down the road. So I want to thank everyone for supporting the podcast. Hope everyone enjoys the weekend. If you enjoy what you heard, consider becoming a patron or at least leaving us a review on iTunes, promoting our work. We put a lot of effort and time in the pod. We appreciate your support and spreading the word. I hope everyone enjoys the weekend. And again, if you're a Milan fan or a Calcio fan on the East Coast, please consider coming to the event in New York on Sunday for the derby. So all the best, everyone. Have a great weekend.